Doesn't it feel like everyone these days is apologizing for doing something wrong?
There were absolutely no violations of law. There was no surveillance of Senator Bruno, but there were absolute improper judgment calls made, and there is no excuse for that. I now accept the facts that are stated in this report. I believed I was wrong. I believed that all responses were to appropriate media inquiries. That was not the case. Now we know better, and we will act upon it.
From Elliot Spitzer to John Mackey of Whole Foods, we've been hearing lots of I'm sorries, but how sincere were they, and have their apologies been accepted, and just what are the ethics of apologies? Well, we've invited Bruce Weinstein to discuss the matter. He writes the Ethics Guy column for businessweek.com, and I'm sorry if this introduction has gone on too long, but I am pleased to welcome Bruce Weinstein to my show. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard.
Elliot Spitzer sort of made a verbal apology there, but the one that he wrote in the Sunday New York Times seemed quite contrite. He wrote, "We made mistakes," and said he apologized to Joe Bruno. He wanted to apologize to all New Yorkers. It wasn't one of those mistakes were made apologies, and yet the matter doesn't seem to be dying down. Does it matter in some cases whether an apology really does seem to be sincere?
It's necessary but not sufficient. And in Spitzer's case, he started out great. He started out like gangbusters. We made mistakes, as opposed to, as you say, Alberto Gonzalez saying mistakes were made. But it went downhill from there. He wasn't very specific about what he was going to do other than that he was going to cooperate. And when you think about it, for the governor of New York, for any governor, to say we made mistakes, one of the things that goes along with having the kind of prestige and power and social standing of being a governor is that the responsibility ultimately is yours.
The buck stops here.
Well, it should. And, you know, kudos to him for saying we made mistakes, but really, from an ethical point of view, should he not have said, I made a mistake?
But if somebody sees an apology as a sign of vulnerability, then they're going to go after you no matter what you say. Isn't that true? Because we're also talking about politics here, and it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. If the opponents say, aha, we gotcha.
You know, it's funny because it seems to be a sign of weakness. It seems as though you're giving up your power by admitting that you made a mistake. But what it accomplishes is just the reverse. When you say that you're sorry, you're actually admitting that you're fallible. And to deny that you made a mistake, well, people know, you know, when you've tripped up. And it's actually a sign of hubris. It's a weakness. It's a vice to refuse to make a mistake. So in the long run, we're actually better off by apologizing when appropriate.
And not being afraid that an apology will make us look weak. But how can we tell if someone is really apologizing for the conduct or just trying to get you to shut up?
We look at the consequences of their behavior. I mean, now, it's great that Governor Spitzer apologized, but now, of course, the question is, what will he do to make reparations? And so it's really up to him to make good on that. So an apology, as I said before, is necessary, but it's not sufficient. After all, it's just a word. Now, Elton John said, it seems to be the hardest word. Well, remember in Love Story, the catch slogan was, love means never having to say you're sorry. It's a great tagline for a movie, but in real life, we have to say we're sorry, and we have to mean it, and we have to follow up on the apology itself.
Let's listen to another recent apology.
You and I both know that whenever we have personal missteps in our lives, there's a lot of people that are out there that are ready to kind of lend their voice to the chorus to tear us down.
That was Alec Baldwin making an apology that wasn't quite an apology.
It was more of an attack on his critics. And sometimes you wonder whether the apology comes from the heart or it's a response to having been caught, having been made public, having had your hand in the cookie jar in the case of certain politicians. And, you know, Alec Baldwin's conduct on that tape was just so reprehensible. There's no apology, really, that could cover it. And so the ethics of apologies has to do, really, to a large extent, with the nature of the offense.
Joe Biden is going to be a guest on the show next week. I don't think we'll be playing his apology to Barack Obama then, but maybe we should listen to it now and see if this was an effective apology.
The word that got me in trouble is using the word clean. I should have said fresh. What I meant is he's got new ideas. He's a new guy in the block.
He's trying to kind of joke himself out of it.
Well, the question is he sorry that he said it, or is he sorry that he feels that way? And, I mean, let's face it. The way we judge a person's character is not by what they say, but by what they do. And also, in this case, apparently we judge it by how a person feels. And to feel that way about a colleague is questionable at best. Now, I mean, I'm not anyone to to criticize his character. I thought actually when we were talking about Senator Biden and apologies, we were going to go back to the plagiarism scandal. Somehow he survived that. And,
he's not taken all that seriously as a presidential candidate, and perhaps it's because of that. Everyone knows that when a candidate runs with a lot of baggage, that even if you're not hitting them with the baggage right now, it's going to come back to haunt. Am I mixing metaphors here? I'm apologizing for that, but you know what I mean.
Well, let's
sooner
look at,
or later, people will use it.
Doris Kearns Goodwin apparently is going on with her career. Now, I haven't seen her on the Today Show since that plagiarism scandal. But, unfortunately, actions have consequences, and they often cast a long shadow.
Well, in the case of Doris Kearns Goodwin, I think people probably just accepted her apology. She said that some assistant had written things down, and she.
Oh, there we go again. It was an assistant. Now, I'm not saying that assistants don't make mistakes, but ultimately, as the writer, as the person of note, she was on the Today Show, not her assistant. Shouldn't ultimately it be her responsibility and hers alone? It's really more of a question than a statement. And I'm not impugning her character or any of the other people I may encounter in a green room sometime. It's really about looking at the ethics of apologies, because we rarely talk about this from an ethical point of view. It's always discussed in terms of the political capital to be gained or the legal issues involved, and those are important. But fundamentally, this is an issue about ethics, not about etiquette, about ethics.
My guest is Bruce Weinstein, who is known as the Ethics Guy, appears weekly on CNN for Ask the Ethics
Actually,
Guy.
I would have to apologize if that went out on the air
no longer corrected. The case.
No, it's no longer the case.
Well, anyway, you do have a column called The Ethics Guy in BusinessWeek.com.
Yes, that is true.
And there is a book called Life Principles, Feeling Good by Doing Good, also by you, and it's published by Emmis Books. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and Emmis reminds me of Don Imus.
Aha. Now, what a great segue.
Yeah.
From Emmis to Imus.
Maybe we should listen to what Don Imus said after he ridiculed the Rutgers University women's basketball players.
I'm sorry I did that. I'm embarrassed that I did that. I did a bad thing. But I'm a good person. And that will change.
It reminds me of that song from Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, the Chris Isaac song, They Did a Bad, Bad Thing. Of course, you wonder in the context of that film why being married and having sex is a bad, bad thing. But that's a separate ethical issue. Here, the question is, if you put this into historical context, why did he wait a couple of days? Why wasn't it done immediately after he said it or the day after? It was, again, almost as though he's apologizing not because he was sincerely sorry, but he was apologizing for having gotten caught.
In fact, he'd poo-pooed what he'd said in earlier statements,
correct.
And it was only after things were really getting rough for him that he made these remarks. And even here, he said, but I'm a good guy, and that will change. And I thought that was a very strange thing to say.
Why did you think it was strange?
A good guy, and that will change?
Yes. You mean, yes.
I guess.
Did you notice he stopped wearing his cowboy hat after that?
Well, he started wearing a white cowboy hat, didn't he, instead
I think
of the black
stopped,
one?
He stopped wearing the hat altogether after that because I think he wanted to do away with the image of the rogue cowboy. But some people feel he paid too great a price for his remarks. You know, he was dumped. I'm not going to say unceremoniously dumped, but he had made comments at least as offensive as that in the past. Why this one? Again, I'm not apologizing for what he did. It just raises questions about the motivation behind it.
And as you said, he let a lot of time elapse before he finally made what sounded like the most sincere of all the apologies. By the way, we invite you to call us. I'm sorry I didn't mention this earlier, but our number here is 212-433-9692. I'm going to drop all the apology jokes from now on. I'm apologizing for making them so far.
May I,
212-433-9692.
Speaking about jokes, do you remember Julia Sweeney's delightful character, Mea Culpa, in the little scene film Stuart Saves His Family by Harold Ramis? This is a one-note character. She's constantly
You may
apologizing.
Be the only person who saw that film.
Well, besides Al Franken and maybe his parents. But it's a gem. And one of the very funny things in a film that's very funny from beginning to end, pretty much, is this character of Julia Sweeney. She's constantly apologizing. You run into her, she apologizes. You spill water on her, she apologizes. We all know that sort of person. And there, you know, it can be inappropriate to apologize too much as it is to apologize not at all.
What about John Mackey of Whole Foods?
Oh, the ethical issues there.
Yeah, but that's not going to hurt Whole Foods, is it?
Well, it may hurt their acquisition of Wild Oats. Now, I'm not an attorney, and I don't play one on TV, but you have to wonder about the legality, if not the ethics, of bad-mouthing this competition before you acquire it. That's something for the Security and Exchange Commission to look at. But, I mean, there's so many ethical issues in that case, not just the apology or lack thereof, but, you know, using such a flagrantly false pseudonym, Rahodeb, which is a bad anagram of his wife's name, doing it to begin with. Why would a powerful person like that engage in such juvenile shenanigans? Did he want to be caught? Did he, at some level, not want his position of power and influence? You just have to wonder.
Now, let's look a bit at the position of the person who owes an apology. There are situations where you're apologizing, but know that this is something that you feel a little more ambivalent about, and it may very well happen again.
Such as what? Could you give me an example, please?
Well, the other person has taken great offense at something that you've said that you feel wasn't so bad, but you have a couple of choices. You can say, you can either just say, well, I don't really think it was all that bad, and hold to that position, knowing that this may be the end of the marriage. Or you just simply say, you know, I'm really sorry I said it, and I'm sorry that it hurt you.
What you often hear in that context, Leonard, is, I'm sorry if your feelings were hurt, which is really a subtle criticism of the other person's hypersensitivity rather than your own sense of sorrow.
And the other person picks that up and doesn't accept
the
apology.
I'm sorry you're so sensitive.
Yeah.
But it's an insult dressed up as an apology.
Well, what do you do when an apology is insisted upon and you don't feel that you should give one? Is it ethical to say, I'm sorry, because you really just don't want this thing to continue any longer?
Let's look at the ethical foundations of apologies. It's really the principle of justice or fairness that requires us in some context to apologize. And that same principle means that it's wrong to apologize if you haven't done anything wrong. It's just as wrong to apologize for something you haven't done as it is not to apologize for something you have done.
Yeah, but you got to get through life, don't you? If you are apologizing that way, often the other person wants an enumeration of mistakes. Doesn't just want this blanket, you know, I'm really sorry that I hurt you.
Well, here's what you say there. You say, make a list and I'll sign it. You know, I mean, but you were saying you have to get through life. There are a couple of questions here. The first could be, what will be best for me politically or professionally or in terms of my social standing? And then there's another question, which is really the question I'm equipped to answer, which is, what's the right thing to do? And the answer to that may be completely different from the answer to the other questions.
Well, do you think in all of the apologies that we have broadcast so far, that any of those apologies were done in the right way, were the right thing to do?
The questionable thing is the context and the timing. And you didn't play Pete Rose's apology, but you could have a few years ago.
The people in Boston are very upset about, or is it LA, Cardinal Mahoney's apology and the way that he delivered that one.
Speaking of Cardinal Mahoney, you may recall a film several years ago called Twist of Faith by Kirby Dick, wonderful documentarian. And it's about a firefighter named Tony Combs from Toledo, Ohio, who had been repeatedly sexually assaulted by a priest he trusted. And the film is about his attempt to get justice. Now, after having suffered sexual abuse at the most critical point of his development, what do you think he wants from the Catholic Church?
An apology.
That's what he wants. It's not the money. Now, some of his friends who were suing the church, that's what they wanted. But he just wanted the Diocese of Toledo to say, we knew this guy was a pedophile, we looked the other way, and it was wrong. And if they had done that, he wouldn't have pursued the legal recourse.
And that, to some degree, that's what some people in Los Angeles have said about Cardinal Mahoney, that if he had simply taken responsibility for what he had done instead of letting this whole thing to go all the way through the courts.
You know,
and then finally issuing apology the courts decided against him, well, that they didn't take that as a sincere apology.
Think about in the political context when we've had a politician who was forthright and honest and sincere. The only time I can think that that occurred in recent memory was the political satire Bullworth, where Warren Beatty's Senator Bullworth has a temerity to be honest. And it's a joke. It's a satire of a film. And have we gotten so cynical in our society that we just don't expect the truth from politicians and we don't expect sincere apologies? I hope not.
Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Bruce Weinstein, who writes the Ethics Guy column for BusinessWeek.com. He also has a book out called Life Principles, Feeling Good by Doing Good. Our number, 212-433-9692.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
As anyone close to me knows, for months I have been grappling with how best to reconcile myself to the American people, to acknowledge my own wrongdoing, and still to maintain my focus on the work of the presidency. Others are presenting my defense on the facts, the law, and the Constitution. Nothing I can say now can add to that. What I want the American people to know, what I want the Congress to know, is that I am profoundly sorry for all I have done wrong in words and deeds. I never should have misled the country, the Congress, my friends or my family. Quite simply, I gave in to my shame. I have been condemned by my accusers with harsh words. And while it's hard to hear yourself called deceitful and manipulative, I remember Ben Franklin's admonition that our critics are our friends, for they do show us our faults. Mere words cannot fully express the profound remorse I feel for what our country is going through and for what members of both parties in Congress are now forced to deal with.
Bill Clinton, that sounded like a very sincere apology, but that also came rather late in the game.
Imagine what would have happened if right from the very beginning of the scandal he had said, okay, I'm caught, it was wrong, I'm sorry. I think what people were really upset about then was not so much that he had an affair, which is bad enough, but that he covered it up. I mean, Watergate was primarily about the cover-up. But I really would like to acknowledge the difficulty in apologizing. And I just think it's really important to recognize that this is not easy stuff, especially when you're the president of the United States. He had the courage to do it finally, but as you were questioning, Leonard, maybe too little too late?
He also apologized for not doing anything in Rwanda after the whole thing was over. He stopped on the tarmac of the airport and he said, I'm really sorry that we allowed the situation to occur. I don't want to pick on Bill Clinton, but I wonder about people making those kinds of apologies way after so much damage has been done.
And really what comes from that. But we can commit wrongdoing by not doing things as much as we can by doing things. There's the sin of omission as well as the sin of commission. But there, just saying I'm sorry, I mean, is that just supposed to make him feel better? What did it do for the world? If he had really wanted to follow through on that, he would have then done something perhaps to aid and abet the situation. But that didn't happen.
Let's take some calls. Mark from Chatham, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air. Chatham?
Chatham, you got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, hi. Chatham up.
I have a... I want to talk about the sin of disingenuousness in terms of the semantics of an apology. That's a mouthful, but here's my sort of sticking point. A lot of people, and just I think it was the top of the hour in that story about Tillman, used the word regret. There was a general who actually said, I regret the family wasn't told, blah, blah, blah. It just seems to me totally disingenuous and as a dodge, as opposed to coming out and saying, I apologize that. So I'd be interested in how your ethicist feels about that.
Well, Shakespeare said it best, I suppose. Words, words, words. They really are just words, and until you back it up with action or you do something to make reparation, how meaningful is it really?
But what about the difference between regret and I'm sorry? Aren't they pretty much synonymous?
Oh, I suppose you'd need someone with expertise in linguistics. Regret, remorse, sorrow. I guess it's better than nothing. But if, again, you don't follow through on the apology somehow, just a word.
Thanks for your call, Mark. Steve from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I have a question, which is what you think about imposing on your children, there's my opinion about it, making your children apologize.
Yeah. Tell the man you're sorry for what you've done.
You know, guilt is actually... a lot of people think love is what binds people, but I believe it's guilt. Guilt is something that we all have in common. I mean, you might say there's a difference between Christian and Jewish guilt, I suppose. Christian guilt is rooted in a fear of alienating God, and Jewish guilt is rooted in a fear of alienating your mother. But here, you know, guilt is a good thing. And if your kids have done something wrong and they don't feel guilty about it, they ought to. And that's the role of the parent, as I understand it, to get someone back on the right track. Now, having said that, you know, parents and teachers and generals, people in positions of power are very good at criticizing their subordinates, their children, their students, getting them, trying to get them back on track when they've gotten off, telling them how they'll be punished if they don't get back on track. But isn't it at least as important to let people know when they're doing a good job? I mean, people will give you their level best if they feel appreciated. And perhaps, you know, instead of punishing people as much as we do, we ought to encourage their better side to come through.
Thank you for calling us. Lisa, also from New Jersey. A lot of people in New Jersey who are thinking about apologizing. Hi,
thank
Lisa.
You. Hi, thank you. It's a great show, and I think you're exploring some very significant issues as far as how we develop as people. And I want to address this parenting issue about and apologizing. And I would like the ethicist, if he could kindly explore the notion of empathy an apology, because it's not just consequences of something bad happening to you, but if the person who's apologizing genuinely feels abashed and terrible for what they've done, and that in and of itself is so powerful, and it seems to be that we're not able to bridge that so that, you know, you can't tell someone to apologize, but how do you help them feel the damage they've done so that they're genuinely in pain from the pain they've inflicted on others? I think that's a real core issue, and that's why so many people don't apologize, because they themselves don't want to feel pain. And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Thank you for calling us, Lisa.
There's a wonderful episode of the Andy Griffith Show in which Opie has his heart set on winning a medal in a race, and after training with Barney for a week, it turns out he doesn't win. He actually comes in last, I believe. And he sulks all the way home, refuses to congratulate the winner, and his father says, you go back there and you congratulate that person. You know, anyone can be a winner, but it takes a strong person to be a good loser. And Opie refuses to do that. So what does his father do? Punish him? Send him to his room without dinner? No. He says, okay, Opie, if that's what you're going to do, so be it. But I want you to know that I'm really disappointed. And that's what turns Opie around. I mean, you could say that he guilted him into it, or that he's using conditional love. But in this context, what he, as the caller I think was getting at, wanted to really get through to Opie. And the only way to do that is to have reflected in his father what it feels like to be let down.
Now, there's the other side. You can apologize with total sense of remorse, and the other person is just pissed off and doesn't accept it.
Well, there's only so much you can do. I mean, we can't write other people's scripts, and you know, you do the best you can do. And
but what about our side? Let's say this person apologized, but it's something that's hurt us incredibly.
No. Yes,
and
yes.
I'm not ready to accept that apology.
This is so important because so many of us refuse to accept the apology. We hold resentment in our heart for years. We hold even hatred. And the question here that is almost never asked is, what does that do to you as the person who refuses to accept the apology? All it does is eat you up. It does nothing to the object of your enmity. And for I'm not going to say for that reason alone, because the reason to apologize is because it's the right thing to do. But here you have to look at the personal consequences, the toll of not accepting an apology.
Let's go to Tony from London.
I can apologize for the information that turned out to be wrong, but I can't sincerely, at least, apologize for removing Saddam.
He's trying to sugarcoat it, doesn't it? Okay. Well, it turns out there were no weapons of mass destruction, but we got Saddam out of there.
That's what Alistair Campbell said earlier when he was here. Alistair Campbell, who wrote the Blair years, the Alistair Campbell diaries, he was his communications director. And he kept on saying that, and that was Tony's take on the whole matter. But isn't that a legitimate apology?
Well, it's more than what we got on our turf, I suppose. So it's better than what we got. But really, does it go far enough? And since the carnage is continuing, really, who is this apology intended to assuage? Who is it intended to help? Who will it help?
Let's go to Bob from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Your guest has been talking about the necessity of following through on an apology, and also you briefly mentioned Christian and Jewish guilt. I'd just like to observe that in the Bible, God doesn't call for an apology. He calls for people to repent, which does mean to change your actions, mm-hmm. change your direction, and you know, do something about it.
And this is a really good point, caller, because the first person to whom you owe an apology is the person you've offended, rather than going above their head or going public or doing anything other than going to the person you've wronged is not the way to go about it. So you raise a really important point, and I wonder how often we really take that into consideration.
Thank you so much for your call. I'm talking with Bruce Weinstein, who is the ethics guy at businessweek.com, and also has written a book called Life Principles, Feeling Good by Doing Good, from MS Press. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Cameron from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that sometimes a person wants to apologize to the victim, but they're told not to, from the advice of a lawyer, because that apology could be used against them later at the court of law as sort of an admission that they did something wrong and they did cause, they were personally responsible for that person's death or serious injury, if we're talking about a car accident, for instance.
I believe that the situation you're talking about is often used in cases of sexual assault, and if a person has raped someone else, forgetting about the legal issues, don't you owe them at the very least an apology? No matter, and there's no statute of limitations on that.
I'm not sure an apology is enough.
It's not enough, but isn't it
important? But we demand it in court. If somebody is being sentenced, a judge will say, you didn't look contrite. Well, you know, I'm a sociopath. I have raped and murdered. And it's going to do anybody any good if I say, you know, I'm really sorry?
It's true. In the press accounts of trials, you often hear how the person person accused of wrongdoing accepts the punishment, accepts the sentence. And short of the sociopath or psychopath, if we have a capacity for acknowledging wrongdoing, then we ought to show regret or remorse. Or as I was saying before with the Andy Griffith example, you know, that we take this to heart. It's not, again, it's not necessary. It's necessary. It's not sufficient. We need to do more than that.
We go to Sharon from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just thought you guys were a little hard on Joe Biden for his inartful description of Senator Obama. And I wanted to kind of contrast that with what happened with IMUS, because Biden, the minority groups in Delaware have really known him for so many years, and he really has a reservoir of good feeling, and it sort of dropped off after that. And when IMUS was, made his comments, there was a reservoir of bad feeling and, you know, a million examples. And I thought really that Biden was sincere. And, people really get on him, calling him a gaffe machine. And maybe I'm just politically smitten, but I just think he's great.
Well, you know, they do say that his is the shortest presidential campaign in history, because the day that he declared it was the day that he made that comment in the New York Observer.
Well, he is still running, and he will be here next week to talk about his new memoir.
Well, what's unfortunate here with the Biden example, possibly with the IMUS example, is it takes very little now to jettison a whole career, a whole life's body of work. I mean, look at Dan Rather. You know, that was a mistake. What he did was not just unfortunate. He did something he shouldn't have done. But now, when you talk about Dan Rather, all we think about, really, or the first thing that comes to mind is how his career ended, and we forget about the many, many years of excellent journalism behind him. So, and you know, in his obituary, you know that's going to be mentioned, and it's just really unfortunate that at the end of his career, that's how he's known.
A listener writes, I'm going to read this one because it was sent in by email, "There are people who learned wrongly that I'm sorry is what you say when you do what you wanted to do, even though it hurts someone else and you know it. They learned that saying the words closes the matter and morally prevents pursuit. I've learned never to allow such people to go as far as committing the wrongful act in the first place, and if they do and they try to offer their faux apology, I never accept it. The lack of easy closure eventually discomforts the person, because I haven't spoken specifically about forgiving the trespass, so they learn to avoid committing the willful error."
Sounds like a very bitter and angry person. And again, you have to wonder, how is this affecting her?
Well, you assumed that it was a woman. I didn't
say
it was a
woman.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I thought you were correct. I thought I heard you say that. I apologize. I was hoping to get through this interview without apologizing, but I guess not.
Well, we apologize to you for time running out, and to all of our listeners who we couldn't get to, but it's been a lot of fun, Bruce.
Thanks, Leonard.
And Bruce Weinstein is the ethics guy. He's written a book called Life Principles, Feeling Good by Doing Good. It's published by Emmis. And how often do your articles appear in businessweek.com?
Every Friday. Every Friday. It's called Ask the Ethics Guy. It's on businessweek.com, and you can actually pull up all the articles I've written to date.
And I assume they're very similar to what we've been talking about.
Oh, they're all over the map. I did a piece about the ethics of spoiling the ending of Harry Potter, and that's it.
On tomorrow's Underreported, we will take a look at El Salvador's plans for the privatization of water resources and how the government has been dealing with protesters. Then pediatrician Perry Klass shares some of the advice she gave her son after he decided to go into medicine. Plus, Iranian-born novelist Dahlia Sofer and Ralph Baruch, who was a group president at CBS before he played a major role in building the foundation for the TV cable industry at Viacom. By the way, if you missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English and Blake Neeschick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephen Valentino, Rory Bernstein, and Scott Goldberg. Debbie Daughtry is at the audio controls, and I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.